Welcome to Random at Memorable, a podcast from 1Password. I'm Anna, producer behind the show.
I'm Sarah, one of the founders at 1Password.
I'm Rue, head of password manager development.
I'm Matt Davey, 1Password's chief experience officer.
And we're the hosts behind Random but Memorable. Together, we offer up bi-weekly security advice, interview special guests from the cybersecurity community, and round up the latest security news in Watchtower Weekly. We may even play a silly game or two. So sit back and enjoy the show. Me and Sarah were just chatting about this is the first time I've been on the podcast since AI Anna was on the podcast.
Oh, God. Well, thank goodness it's actually you and not AI Anna.
But is it, though?
Yes, it is. Do you know how I know?
No.
Because you're responding in near real time.
Yeah,
so that's
true.
How I know.
And I'm not talking about cozy socks, asking what kind of socks you're wearing.
It's legit PTSD, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't like it. This will shut me down. I don't like talking about it. It was very disconcerting.
Think about my friends and family. Like, they're so paranoid now whenever they pick up the phone to me. Like, is this really Anna?
Oh, God. So we're down to Matthew this week.
Yeah.
He is in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis? Minnesota?
So you get me as a British stand-in.
Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yes.
And okay.
We get you as an upgrade, Anna.
An upgrade, exactly.
Oh, okay. I was going to say a poor man's Matt.
No.
It's
a rich man's Matt.
A rich man's Matt. Okay. I can live with that.
Yeah.
The magical Matt.
Sorry, Matt. We love you. We miss you.
So, Sarah, did you go to Halifax? Are you in Minneapolis? Like, have you?
I have not done any traveling because I'm actually going on holiday.
Ooh.
As of Friday, I'm going on some PTO, and I'm
nice.
Oh my.
I'm super excited.
That's amazing. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
Are you actually going anywhere?
Multiple places, actually. It's
ooh.
So it turned out. It started with my son. He is a bit of a metalhead, like his dad. And so there is a music festival in Las Vegas, which all of those words together plus me, terror, fear of God. I've never done like a giant festival ground music thing. And so I was like, you know what? I'll go because I'm gonna have the clear backpack with the like band-aids and the extra earplugs and like total mom mode. I'm like,
nice.
I'm there like extra contacts. What do you need, baby? I got it. I'll help you.
I want you in all the merch, Sarah. You've got to buy all the t-shirts and put the eyeliner on. And
it's going to be a lot of stuff, but then Las Vegas doesn't do anything to me. But you know what's really close by? It's only 3-4 hours away, Disneyland. So I'm like, you know what? I could use a break because work's been a lot. It's been really busy. And I thought I could just, you know, I'm just going to go spend a week by myself in Disneyland. I'm just going to go and have some quiet me time.
I love how that's your version of self-care, is going to Disneyland on your
That's so good.
Disneyland is very chill. Very, you know, it's just going to be so nice. So maybe if we have any listeners who are attending Sick New World, I don't think I'll be wearing a 1Password shirt. But if you see an old lady with a backpack with earplugs, I'll have extra. Let me know.
And some plasters.
Yes. I'm there to help.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Wait, so without Matt here to anchor us, who's doing the Watchtower Weekly?
You are.
I'm doing Watchtower Weekly.
I did say this.
Okay. Great.
Before we do that, though, we need to do a quick shout out to one of our team members.
We do.
Julie here at 1Password.
Yeah.
Because I know Julie told you this specifically, Rue, but Julie, and as we talked about kids and bonding time, one of the things that she does when they're driving to school in the morning is put Random But Memorable on, and her child, who is 9, hello, listener to the show, waving at you even though you can't see my hand waving.
Hello.
They love that. They love listening to us. So thank you for tuning in and finding fun things to do together. I think that's awesome.
Yes, I specifically said to Julie, I will make sure to say hi to Garrick, who apparently loves the show. So good morning, Julie and Garrick. Hope you're having a great drive to school. And, you know, we love that you listen. This is awesome.
Yay.
So cute. I can just picture it. It's very cute.
Yeah,
I can just
cool.
see it right now. Like, Mom, did they say my name? They did. We did.
Ah, that's fun. It feels good to use powers for good.
Very much so.
Oh, man. All right. So let's get into some Watchtower Weekly. This is the part of the show where we like to report on some security news or headlines that have recently caught our eye and spend some time discussing them. Plus, we usually like to use these as a good excuse to rate some hacker group names out of 10. So to get the ball rolling this week, we have an old school data breach story from TechCrunch, as Roku says that 576,000 user accounts were hacked after a second security incident. Yes, streaming giant Roku has confirmed a second security incident in as many months, with hackers this time able to compromise more than 500,000 Roku user accounts. I gotta tell you, like, this is terrible and, you know, not great, but there's something that feels very comforting about just a good old-fashioned security breach after, like, some of the nonsense that's happened.
Like the good old days.
Yeah, we're not getting any ransomware. This is just, you know, a good old-fashioned security breach. That being said, still not good. This shouldn't have happened. In a recent statement, the company said that about 576,000 user accounts were accessed using credential stuffing, where malicious hackers use usernames and passwords that have been stolen from other data breaches and then reuse the logins on other sites. So this is why, everybody, unique passwords for every site. One password can help you out here. Roku said in fewer than 400 account breaches, the malicious hackers made fraudulent purchases of Roku hardware and streaming subscriptions using the payment data stored in those users' accounts. Roku said it refunded the customers affected by the account intrusions. The company, which has 80 million customers, said the malicious hackers were not able to access sensitive user information or full credit card information. Roku said it discovered the second incident while it was notifying some 15,000 Roku users that their accounts were compromised in an earlier credential stuffing attack. Following the security incidents, Roku said it rolled out two-factor authentication to users. As we know, two-factor authentication assists in preventing credential stuffing attacks by adding an additional layer of security to your online accounts. Yeah. What do we think about this, team?
All I could think about when you were like, good old-fashioned reused passwords, I was like, oh, this old chestnut.
I know. It really is like so comforting in a weird way.
It's just, we had some previously hacked stuff and then we stuffed it in there, and like, it's a very textbook example. There's nothing wild or unusual, like, which again, it speaks to like, this is why good password habits are so important, because this kind of thing still affects people very, very easily. And, you know, you've got over 500,000 accounts just because of plain old regular reused passwords. So it's secure, individual, unique passwords on every single account. Do it, people. It's important. Get it done.
This is something that's come up a lot in the interviews that we've had on the show recently, which is the concept of, like, you got to work the fundamentals. Like, you got to have the basics in place. Like, don't worry about AI coming and spoofing your voice if you're still reusing passwords everywhere. Make sure you've got the fundamentals in place, and then you can start to, you know, that's going to take care of 90% of the problems that you're probably going to run into. Then you can start thinking of the other things.
Yeah, definitely don't do it.
I remember when I read this story, I was just like, if this was a movie, this is kind of like the crappy sequel that all of us kind of knew was coming. Nobody really wanted it, but it's here anyway, and it's basically exactly the same as the first film. You know, just another credential stuffing attack.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely feel like I've seen this movie before.
All right. Let's jump over to Wired.com. Crypto FOMO is back, and so are the scams. In 2021... the price of Dogecoin, a crypto token started as a joke, increased 70-fold in the span of 4 months. The total value of the coin in circulations reached $70 billion. Manufacturing business owner Ryan invests in new meme coins as a form of entertainment and said, imagine being one of the early adopters of Dogecoin. The Dogecoin format has been riffed upon by hundreds of copycat meme coins. They serve no purpose and promise no innovation, yet a few have charted a similarly precipitous rise in price. The market for meme coins, predicated on the idea that anyone can become wealthy if only they are quick enough off the mark, has created a window of opportunity for scam artists. The scams come in different flavors, but lately, playing on the desire among investors to get in before the crowd, scammers have taken to advertising early bird rates for those that buy in before a token is released. Data provided by crypto security company Blockade shows that the number of meme token pre-sales increased fivefold between February and March, when the price of Bitcoin surged to record heights. A third of the 369 pre-sales in March alone were identified as scams by Blockade. Quote, scammers try to feed on the FOMO, says the Blockade co-founder. Earlier this year, Ryan was casting about for a new investment. Who is Ryan? Who is this Ryan? I've mentioned Ryan twice now.
The meme cone person. He invests okay. in meme coins. Meme coins?
Meme coins.
The thing.
He does okay. it for entertainment.
Right. He owns a business and he thinks okay. it's fun.
Yeah.
He's Got in it, it for the chase. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
He's in it for the chase.
Okay. So earlier this year, Ryan was casting about for a new investment. He put $750 into the pre-sale of a token named Rebel Satoshi. The website was dressed with charming artwork. Investors could pay by credit card and an apparent...
I'm not going to rate that one, Rue.
I'm not. I'm just going to skip right over it.
Glaze over it.
And an apparent press release about it had appeared on Yahoo Finance, all of which gave him confidence in the token's legitimacy. But Ryan said, quote, "It wasn't long before I started having doubts." Before the token was set to be released, the developers behind Rebel Satoshi changed the rules. While investors were first promised their full allocation prior to launch, it would now be meted out in increments every Monday over a period of 8 weeks. Each of those transactions had an associated fee, which could now cumulatively exceed the total value of a small investor's stake. Within days of the Rebel Satoshi's March launch, its price had collapsed by 65%. The Rebel Satoshi social accounts began to advertise a different token, now available for early purchase. Investors started to speculate the whole thing might be a scam. On a Discord channel for the coin's investors, legitimate queries were buried under a pile of spam. When Ryan started asking pointed questions, he was banned by the moderators. Suspecting he has fallen victim to a scam, Ryan has tried to warn others away. Quote, "While $750 is a lot to lose, it wouldn't be the end of me," he says, "but I feel bad for those that really lost." The type of swindle Ryan suspects he has been caught in is known as a token presale scam. The format has been around for a while, but amidst the FOMO that comes with skyrocketing cryptocurrency prices, people are particularly vulnerable. One way to guard against these scams, says Dima Budaran, co-founder of Hacken, would be to establish an industry-wide standard for new crypto tokens, mandating features in the code that prevent developers from abusing their control over large amounts of the token. In theory, provided someone were able to persuade exchanges and other stakeholders to adopt the new standard in unison, any tokens that diverged could be readily identified and blacklisted. Quote, "It could be fixed relatively easily with a standard," says Budaran.
Huh. Well, that's something, isn't it?
Yeah.
I do feel like FOMO is like the perfect word to use, because it's like that is the currency for crypto, is playing on people's fear of missing out.
Yeah.
Which is potentially why people fall for scams like these, because
yeah.
it plays on the urgency.
It's just that whole, like, if it's too good to be true, it really is. Like, it's just, I don't know. I can't, again, I'm the old lady with the clear backpack and the extra hearing protection. Like, it's not, you know, the only FOMO I have here is, like, I'm not going to be hip enough to understand what's even happening here. Like, I am not a Bitcoin person by any stretch of any imagination. So I think real estate's a safe place to invest, but that's about it.
Yep. It's another one that just feels like a bit of a classic here. Like, apparently new cryptocurrency is cropping up all the time. Like, I feel like it's fallen out of the news so much that I kind of didn't even realize that it was a thing. I thought that Bitcoin had sort of settled down and there were still some people who were trading in it, but otherwise, like, that was kind of it. So it is surprising to me to hear that this is a thing that is still coming up.
Yeah. So is this basically just NFTs for those of us that couldn't get into this? I don't know.
They are not. No. These are new cryptocurrency.
Okay.
This is like, oh, hey, you know, Bitcoin was really huge. Well, here's a new type of coin.
Ethereum. And,
that's yeah. now you can, you know, if you get in early, you can ride the wave to the very top. Like, that's what this is.
But the names are just getting more and more ridiculous, like Dogecoin and whatever the other one was. Come on. Make them believable.
Yeah.
At least make them sound legitimate.
Yeah.
I should still avoid it. Regardless.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's stay with Wired.com and go to an article they had the other day. DuckDuckGo is taking its privacy fight to data brokers. Some good news.
Yay.
For more than a decade, DuckDuckGo has railed against Google's extensive online tracking. Now, the privacy-focused web search and browser company has another target in its sights, the web of data brokers that collect and sell your data every single day. DuckDuckGo has just launched a new browser-based tool that automatically scans data broker websites for your name and address and requests that they be removed. Gabriel Weinberg, the company's founder and CEO, says the personal information removal product is the first of its kind where users don't have to submit any of their details to the tool's owners. The service will make the requests for information to be removed and then continually check if new records have been added. Weinberg says, "We've been doing it to automate it completely end-to-end, so you don't have to do anything." The personal information removal is part of DuckDuckGo's first subscription service called Privacy Pro and is bundled with the firm's first VPN and an identity theft restoration service. Weinberg says the subscription offering, which is initially available only in the U.S. for $9.99 per month or $99.99 per year, is part of an effort to add to the privacy-focused tools it provides within its web browser and search engine. Weinberg says, quote, "There's only so much we can do in that browsing loop. There's things happening outside of that, and a big one is data brokers selling information scraped from different places." The data broker industry is a far-reaching $200-plus billion market which collects, buys, and sells as much information as it can. A lack of comprehensive privacy laws in the U.S. allows companies to easily trade everything from people's names and addresses to financial data and specific GPS coordinates gathered from your phone. The recently proposed American Privacy Rights Act, if passed, would create a new registry of data brokers and give people some European-style privacy rights. DuckDuckGo's personal information removal tool, for now at least, is taking the privacy fight to people-searched websites, which allows you to look up names, addresses, and some details of family members. On the surface, the removal tool is straightforward. You access it through the company's browser and enter some information about yourself, such as your name, your year of birth, and any addresses. It then scans 53 data broker websites for results linked to you and requests those results to be wiped. All 53 data brokers included have opt-out schemes that allow people to make requests. A dashboard shows updates about what has been removed and when it will next scan those websites again in case new records have been added. I think this is great. I love it. And it's nice to see DuckDuckGo charging for something. So happy about that.
Very much so. It's nice to be able to, like, I don't know, it feels like you're in control of your information.
I agree.
Yay.
It's so good. We have nothing to say on it.
It is. Yeah, it's great. All right. Well, on that incredibly uplifting note, we can move on to my chat with Charlie from WageStream. Charlie is the head of security at WageStream, which is a financial well-being platform offered by thousands of large corporations and employers. He and I recently had some time to discuss the hidden dangers of shadow IT and get fully into the nitty-gritty of what it is and what it looks like out in the wild. We also touch on why it's becoming such a challenge in the current corporate landscape and what we can do to securely manage it. So without further ado, let's drop it in here. Joining me on the show today is Charlie Livingston from WageStream. Charlie is currently head of infrastructure and security at WageStream, a financial well-being platform for frontline workers founded by charities, proven by data, and built around flexible pay. Today we're going to dig into the growing challenge of shadow IT, what it is, and what we can do to safeguard ourselves and our organizations. Welcome to the show, Charlie. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah, man. All right. You want to talk a little bit about yourself? Kick us off with a little bit of your journey in cybersecurity and what led you to where you are today?
So I've been in the industry about 20 years. My career has spanned many large and small companies. I've worked for big companies like Samsung, Rogers up in Canada, NBC Universal, Sports Illustrated. But I've also got a special place in my heart for startups. I was on a very small team that founded a company called Leak Toolbox that turned into a much larger thing called Sports Illustrated Play and is now part of Sports Engine. And through all of that, my interest has always been in infrastructure and security and really figuring out new and interesting novel ways to apply the requirements of security while enabling high velocity growth at companies. There, a lot of times those goals are at odds, but the challenge of making the two combined has been a really interesting career path for me.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially in startup mode where it's just like, let's just go. Like, let's not wait around. Like, let's move now.
Yeah.
Being like, cool, let's also do these security things that we're going to have to think about and it might slow us down just a little bit.
Yeah, it's really moving from like the big corporate of just saying no to all requests because it might cause a security issue to saying, well, yeah, we can do that, but have you considered X, Y, or Z?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of WageStream? Like, what is it as a platform? What does it have to offer? How does it work?
Sure. WageStream is a company founded in the UK, as you mentioned at the beginning. It's charity-backed. All of our funding came from five really great charities.
Nice.
What our goal is we want to provide fair financial services to every frontline worker. And really what that means is we have the unique position of being tied to employees' pay. So we're able to offer very, very good financial services to people who typically aren't eligible for these things. There's this thing we look at, which is the poverty premium. And there is a cost to not making a lot of money. You pay more for credit products. You don't get good rates on your mortgages, on your car payments, on your credit cards. And WageStream is really built from the ground up to battle that and to make finance fair for everyone.
It's really interesting. I was watching a video the other day that talked about sort of the different ways that different people view money. And people who are lower income view money as a means to just like get through their day, right? To pay for the next thing that they need in order to live and survive. Middle class folks tend to look at money as a way of paying for luxury items, going on vacation and going beyond the bare necessities. And then those who are more wealthy look at money as a way to put that money back to work for them. Like every dollar is a little worker. How much is WageStream trying to level that playing field? Or like, where is WageStream playing in that realm of like those three classes?
I would say actually one of the most powerful things we've done is we've done a lot of work and a lot of research on opt-in savings. So many of the frontline workers we've worked with have never had a savings account, have never had any money to fall back on. So what we do, again, with the employers, and because we have this deep connection to people's pay, is we can actually help people build small rainy day funds, and it's game-changing. One of the favorite pieces of feedback I've ever seen about our application is somebody talking about their pet getting sick and the fact that they didn't have to take out a loan, they didn't have to go to a loan shark or one of these god-awful high-interest paycheck cashing places and get a 1,000% APR loan. They literally just went into the savings pot that they completely forgot they had, that we had built for them, and paid for the medical care that their pet needed and had zero stress.
That's amazing.
We have done research, and just the having a better relationship with money and having a better relationship with your pay, 33% of the people that we work with have actually said that they feel more calm, that they have a better relationship with their families and with their friends because they're not concerned about money. They're not concerned about where their rent's coming from or how they're affording their next power bill.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's really cool. Okay, so your role as the head of infrastructure and security, I'm sure you've got some unique challenges in this space and ensuring security and efficiency for the systems that you've built, especially seeing as like you're handling sensitive financial data. Can you talk about some of the specific projects or problems that you've worked on since starting there?
Yeah, so this is probably one of the most unique companies I've ever worked with because of this great mission that we have. Everybody is so invested in it. So working with your fellow employees and getting them to like handle customer data and like employees' payroll data and sensitive financial information with, for lack of a better term, the reverence it deserves is really easy in this company. Everybody is so wholly invested in the company. So generally, the challenges you have around getting people to be mindful and always be thinking about security is much lesser than it is in any other company. But it gives us the ability to really focus on the core of what we're doing, making sure that when we're talking to our partners like Bupa and the NHS in the UK, that they're confident that when they send us their employees' data, that it's being treated with at least as good as they would treat it themselves, if not better. That the controls that we're putting in around it, that the way we handle it, the way we store it, the way we use it, is best in class in the industry.
Yeah, that's really cool. It is amazing. I'm sure you can imagine that I also work in an organization that has that similar view of customer data and how we handle it and what we can do with it and what we can't. It is amazing how it creates this like baseline level of comfort in your workplace where like, you know, I've never been asked in the 10 years that I've worked at 1Password to do something that I consider shady with people's data, right? And it's like, it wouldn't even enter my head for someone to ask me that. And you can just be like, cool, like now that we all agree that this is the baseline for how we should treat this stuff, let's go and solve the problems that we have to solve.
You are 100% right about that. Like when security and treating people's data properly is at the core of your company, it's like what the company was built on. It makes the job remarkably easy.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, let's dig into a little bit of shadow IT. Shadow IT, I think, is a relatively recent focus for a lot of companies as they've grown and certainly as we've gone remote. Can you talk a little bit about your definition of shadow IT? Like, let's establish a baseline here.
Yeah, I think starting out the definition is a good point because it is one of those nebulous things. Even the name of it, like shadow IT, it sounds like it's this like the NSA is doing IT for you or But my definition, the way I use it in communication, is really just anything that's being done outside of the core IT team. The temptation to just, oh, I'm going to go and use this SaaS product, or I need to build my own little database for a little side project, and I don't want to involve IT. The concern in bigger companies and in companies that I've worked in the past is, I don't want to talk to IT because they're a monolith, and it's going to quadruple the budget for this project. It's going to take 6 months, and they're probably going to screw it up. Whereas in a company like WageStream, it's a lot more innocent. Oh, IT is so busy, I don't want to bother them. It's just a small project. I'll just do it.
Yeah. So how do you find that sort of like mindset running up against this baseline security mindset that the company has? And like, where do you find the challenges in communicating about it and about the risks within the company?
I think a lot of this lies on, I don't know if you've heard the term Hanlon's razor before, but like, don't attribute to malice what you can attribute to stupidity. Stupidity is not the word I use, but just like misplaced good intention. Shadow IT in an organization like WageStream, it's never somebody being malicious and saying, oh, I want to sneak this under the radar from IT. It's misplaced good intention. Oh, IT is too busy. I'm not important enough. What I'm doing isn't important enough to bother IT. The biggest thing for Shadow IT and WageStream isn't really from a security standpoint. It's more from a SaaS spend. And it's a lot of people saying, oh, I just need a little tool in my browser to do text-to-speech. It costs $10 a month. It's not a big deal. But across 200 employees, $10 a month across 20 different platforms, it's really, really expensive, really, really quick. And also just dealing with, what is that browser actually reading? Have you read the terms of service? Is it really cheap? Oh, it's a free tool. Okay, well, why is it free? What data are they selling?
Who's the customer all of a sudden?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, with all of that said, do you have any Shadow IT horror stories to share with us?
At WageStream, again, it's been pretty good. We're a good-natured bunch. In the past, absolutely, I can see horror stories. I specifically remember at one of the large companies I worked with, finding out that one of the main employee training databases that like recorded all of the scores for every employee who'd gone through training on any course was stored on a computer under somebody's desk at home. We just didn't know until the power went out at that guy's house and we couldn't run our compliance reports for 2 days.
Whoa. That's pretty good.
Right?
That's a good one.
But yeah, it was a small project. Somebody just, oh, I'm going to test this out. And it just kept growing and growing and growing into this big production thing that everybody used over years. Shadow IT unchecked over time, a lot of it is good natured. It's not bad intention. But it's just, it grows into this time bomb waiting to go off.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that we've seen internally as well. Just like things that we used to do that were normal ways of getting things done and weren't necessarily overtly risky become problems of scale when you start to add thousands of employees. And certainly, I'm going to embellish your story a little bit here. Like a Microsoft Access database running on someone's Dell tower in their basement office is one of those things for sure.
There are so many dark corners of large corporations that are run on an Excel spreadsheet that nobody except for like one person from 1994 knows how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So WageStream is a hybrid company, right? You've got people who are working from home. You've got people who are working in the office. What have you noticed in how you manage security compared to the past, where everyone was sort of tied to that physical location and had those company managed devices on the company network?
I think the biggest thing, WageStream being founded in 2018, we were really forged in the cloud and cloud first. On-prem was never really a thing we had to worry about. So when the pandemic hit, it was much less of a big deal for us to just go fully remote. And then as restrictions started to lift to move back into a hybrid model, it wasn't a big deal for us because all of our tools are online. Our security model, our threat model is we treat every network like you're working from a Starbucks. So it doesn't matter if you're in our office connected to our network. It doesn't matter if you're working from home. It doesn't matter if you're working from, well, if you're working from a sunny beach somewhere, I'm going to be a bit jealous. But it doesn't matter where you work, and it really localizes the threat model. It really localizes how you're managing security. You really want to manage security on the device, and you want to make sure that your devices are trusted. But past that, relying on the comfort of, oh, well, they're in the office network, we can trust them, becomes a thing of the past.
Yes, I can see that. It's very similar here as well. You mentioned that Shadow IT within WageStream is we'll say, good-natured. Still, I'm assuming it's something that you want to keep an eye on. You want to work on mitigating it. Like, how do you manage and mitigate it within the org?
There's a two-fold approach to this. First off is the carrot versus the stick. I am continually horrified by the security industry at large on how adversarial a lot of blog posts and a lot of posts on Twitter, if you dare venture there, are about your user base. Like, oh, your users are stupid. Your users are always trying to break. How dare you trust your users with this or your users with that? They're just going to go out and break it. And I'm like, if you can't trust the people you're working with, who can you trust? So changing that model over to a collaborative model, and like, when I talk to everybody in the company as Mr. Security Guy, I'm like, I'm here to work with you. I'm here to make your job easier. I'm here to give you the tools you need to do your job securely and then get the hell out of your way. If I'm stopping you from doing something, I'm not an asset to this company. I'm a detriment to this company, and I may as well just leave and go somewhere else. And when people have problems or when people have done something and they realize, oh, wait, maybe I should talk to IT about it, they're way happier to go, hey, we're doing this. What do you think? Versus, again, like, oh, I have to trudge up to the IT department. I have to talk to them. I don't want to do it. It's going to be such a problem. They're going to make me fill out 10 forms. Where I'm just like, hey, how can I help?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's like a really magical moment. And I'd be curious to know if you've had this happen yet, where it transitions from like, hey, we're trying to do this, how would we do this well, to like, hey, we're trying to do this and we think that this is how we go about it. Is this, are we thinking about this the right way? And if you can get people to show up to you with solutions that are already secure, they're already thinking about it the right way, it's such a huge lift of a burden on you as an IT department.
That is the dream, isn't it? Absolutely. It happens every day at LeechStream.
Yeah, nice.
We have this fantastic internal RFC process. So when we're talking about platform changes or when we're talking about designing new features, because we're such a dispersed group of people, we build a wiki article, we write an RFC, everybody gets to comment on it. And the number of comments coming from all of our engineering team and our product design teams, and even like people in customer service saying, hey, have you thought about this angle? Or how does this affect security? Or my favorite question every time is, what type of encryption are we using for this? Like, yes, my job here is complete.
Nice.
It's really like being a proud father and just watching all your birds leave the nest and fly off to be glorious eagles.
That's super cool. I love that. All right. All that being said, and it's wonderful that you've got people who are thinking this way and executing in this way. There still needs to be some balance between innovation and flexibility in the technology solutions while still staying secure. So like, how are you finding that balance? How do you think that that balance is being executed in the industry and then within WageStream?
So I'll start with the industry. And again, my complaint, it's gotten a lot better recently. There are so many good alternative voices in the security industry that aren't saying all your users are idiots, you can't trust anybody. I'm really seeing a sea change in the industry, and it's heartening. Mindful IT, mindful security, security that involves the human factor, and realize that like there's emotion. If you respect your users and the people you're working with, and realize that if you're hiring the right people, everybody should have the best intentions in mind and designing around that. And instead of designing adversarial systems, you're building guardrails so people can develop safely and do things safely and confidently. It's so much easier. And that's the way we've been doing things in WageStream, is really like building guardrails, building policies, building a collaborative framework that allows people to do their jobs and understand that they can do them safely. And here's how you do it the right way.
Yeah, that's really cool. So this concept of creating guardrails and sort of putting bumpers up down the bowling lane for people to operate in, is that sort of your recommended approach for any company who's really focused on shadow IT and concerned about some of the aspects that it brings into the network?
It absolutely depends on your threat model. But from what I've seen and from almost every example of shadow IT I've seen, it isn't a failure of your controls. It's a failure of your relationship with your users. If your users are resorting to shadow IT, it means there's a breakdown somewhere in process they didn't want to deal with actual IT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or weren't able to, or didn't know how to.
For sure. Okay, last but not least, where can people go to find out more about you or check out WageStream?
For WageStream, definitely check out WageStream.com. Check us out on LinkedIn. If you have interest in our community mission and want to see some of the research on how WageStream really benefits employees, I suggest you look up the research that we've done on financial inclusion and the impact we've done. Personally, I'm a bit of a social media recluse. You can find me on Twitter at CCLiv, or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Charlie Livingston.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Charlie, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's an absolute pleasure.
Well, that was a great interview, Rue. And thank you as well to Charlie for coming in and spending time with us. We appreciate that. Before we get into our giveaway, I just wanted to take a moment to quickly plug our ebook, which is a great resource for everyone out there to learn more about shadow IT and who want to dig into it a little bit more following that interview. The ebook is called The New Perimeter, Access Management in a Hybrid World, and it goes into why risk management starts with securing employee login credentials, how credential management can make a productive way the secure way, and how to secure every sign-in. If you're interested to learn more, then we'll leave a link to the ebook and the show notes for you below. Yay! Easter eggs. Extra bonus stuff.
Perfect.
Nice.
Woo! We love it.
It's a good thing, which brings us to the next part, which is even more exciting. So in our last episode, we launched a giveaway in honor of our guest appearance from Steven at the Family Online Safety Institute. And I'm excited because we now get to announce some winners. Yay!
Woo-hoo! Fantastic.
We love giving stuff away.
We do. For this giveaway, we asked folks to write into the show with their stories on tips on how to stay secure as a family or how you're using 1Password Families already. We've picked a few of our favorites who will each win 1 year free of their 1Password Family account. The first family tip that we loved was from Nate, who said, "I will never not recommend 1Password. Best tips to stay safe, always verify everything. Never do what something tells you to do. Go out to Google, search for the company, then call them. Also, listen to the watchtower. Do what it says." I love this, but it's not the same as your GPS. Do not follow us into, all I can think of is the people who follow us into like a river. You know, trust but verify. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to help you verify things.
Yeah. It reminds me of that phrase growing up was like, if little Johnny jumped off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge?
Yeah, yeah. And then we don't follow them off of the bridge. Our second tip comes from Soren, although with their handle, it makes me think it maybe it's Zoran and I'm pronouncing it wrong, but we'll see. They wrote in to say that they check their 1Password account weekly and add 2FA to any accounts that have just added it to their security. 1Password's built-in authenticator system is super convenient. And yes, thank you. Appreciate that. I think that's one of the nice things about Watchtower is that you might have a login from like 3 years ago and then that site has just added 2FA. So Watchtower can flag that for you. So now you can go back and make it extra secure. So it's a great way to just kind of, you know, spring cleaning. It's that time of year. So get in there, clean them up, get them done and make sure you and your whole family are staying secure online.
Nice. I like to have a bumper hour every now and then, or just check Watchtower and then just rage through all of them.
I like rage through all of them. That's great.
And we have one final winner receiving 1 free year of 1Password Families today. And this is from Henning, who wrote to the show with some good tips on how to foster good password hygiene for the family. And they share some examples spanning 3 different generations. So the first tip is they use a shared vault for home for the password, such as a Wi-Fi password or streaming services with access given to all family members. And they also have a shared vault for the elderly parents' home with Wi-Fi password and home-related logins because it's easy to help out when the parents are stumped and don't know what to do. Another tip Henning has for us is that they have 1 shared vault with their wife for each of their 2 children, in which all logins like their school lunch selection, web page, public library, they're all stored there. And this one's also pretty cool. So they have a parental email address and they have 1 set up per child that forwards to both parents. So Henning says this is helpful to have as a separate login name for each child on services used by both. It also lets them enter the respective email address in the contact field on forms, ensuring that both parents get relevant info without forwarding emails. And then finally, I really like this tip. They have 1 vault per child for their logins. So when they get old enough, they can get their own 1Password family user, and that vault is shared. So apparently this was done recently and successfully with their 13-year-old, and they hope to do it soon with their 10-year-old.
Yay.
So that was a bumper set of family-based 1Password tips there. So we couldn't give Henning a free year of 1Password families.
I see more things we love. We love all the things.
So now we've announced our giveaway winners. I think we can play everyone's favorite game, Security Blank. Is it your favorite game?
Favorite game to lose.
I think it is.
But first, let us set the mood with the jingle. Okay, so normally we would read out some security news headlines with one or multiple words blanked out, but this week I wanted to try mix things up and do something a bit different. So I have 1Password's recently published State of Enterprise Security report from 2024, and I thought it would be fun to have you both guess some of the statistics and findings from the report.
All right.
How does that sound?
That sounds great. Let's do it.
Okay, so as always, I'm going to give multiple choice answers to make things a little easier. And the first statistic from our enterprise security report is, what percentage of managers and higher admit to poor password practices? Is it 22%? Is it 51%? 18%? Or 64%?
Come on, Sarah. Go ahead. I'll let you lead off here.
It feels like I'm picking the wrong one, but I feel like it's 64%.
I also was going to say 64% because managers and higher, they don't have time for good password practices. They're just reusing the same thing every time.
Okay, I hate to say it, but you are both correct. It is 64% of managers and higher admit to poor password practices.
I mean,
not so good for us.
Yay, but boo.
So the next one is, one in how many employees use unapproved apps and tools otherwise known as shadow IT? Is it 1 in 5, 1 in 3, 1 in 10, or 1 in 20?
Again,
I'm stuck between the 5 and 3.
It's the 3. Like, everybody does this. Pretty much everybody does this.
I'm going to go with 5, just because then we're different, but I feel like it might be the 3.
All right.
I'm going to go with the 5.
Oh, no, Sarah. You always do this.
Fine.
Rue is correct. It is 1 in 3 employees use unapproved apps and tools otherwise known as shadow IT.
I did it wrong.
Okay, so what percentage of security pros say it's almost impossible to find the right balance between security and employee productivity? Is it 12%, 26%, 34%, or 50%?
See, 50 seems like too round a number, but all of them seem too low if I don't go with 50. I'm going to go with 50, and I'm not going to go against my gut. I was going to say 34, but now I'm going to say 50. So now if Rue says 34 and he's right, I'm going to shot myself in the foot.
No, my tactic, Sarah, I know that you're big on tactics for these games.
Yes.
My tactic is to just always pick the most pessimistic answer. So I'm going with 50%.
That is a good tactic to have when it comes to this quiz, because 50% of security pros say it's almost impossible to find the right balance between security and employee productivity.
Oh, our State of Enterprise Security report paints a grim picture. Uh-huh. I don't like it.
Okay, so next up, we have 4 in how many security pros don't believe their security protections are adequate? Is it 4 in 20, 4 in 5, 4 in 10, or 4 in 100?
No, it's not 4 in 100.
4% of security pros.
I see the pessimistic answer in me wants to go 4 in 5, but that feels like dentists and toothpastes.
I'm gonna go 4 out of 10, just to buck the trend a little bit,
just to be slightly optimistic.
Yes, yeah, I got to bring a little optimism here into my answer, so I'm gonna say 4 in 10.
That's 2 out of 5. Like, if I was going to say 4 in it, like, I got to go 4 out of 5, because otherwise I would have said 2 out of 10, 2 out of 5, instead of 4 in 10. I'm going to go with the math answer on this one. So I'm going to go with 4 in 5.
So which one are you going with?
4 in 5.
Four out of five? Okay.
Because otherwise it would be 2 in 5. Because fractions, we want to reduce our fractions down to lowest denominators. Please, math, save me. Let me come up with the tie, please.
Okay, but Sarah, you are clawing it back because it's 4 in 5 security pros don't feel their security protections are adequate. That's 79%, apparently.
Oof. Thank you, math.
So what percentage of employees have been or have seen a colleague be the target of a phishing attack from someone posing as a CEO, manager, colleague, vendor, or client? Is it 75%, 61%, 34%, or 9%?
I mean, if it was here at 1Password, it's 100%. 100% of people have got an email from fake Shiner.
100%.
Jeff needing a quick moment of our time.
Just an iTunes cards really quickly.
can you get me some Target gift cards?
Yes. I got to go with 75%, but even that seems low. Like, phishing attacks are like the thing.
Yep. Yep. Listen, just to be different, to make this an exciting game, we're going 61% for me here.
Oh, come on. You know it's not 61.
Yep. No, I know it's not, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Are you sure it's not 61%?
Don't do this to me, Anna.
It can't be 61%.
I'm sorry, but it is 61%.
Oh, come on.
Of employees have been or have seen a colleague be the target of a phishing attack from someone posing as CEO, 61? Manager, colleague, vendor, or client.
Rude.
That was the rogue one.
All I got to do is match you on the last answer.
Okay, this is the tiebreaker, potentially.
I will answer first on this last one, Sarah, okay, so that you can decide what to do.
Okay, what percentage of security pros have security concerns around AI? Is it 92%, 76%, 42%, or 18%?
It is 18%. Nobody cares about AI.
Are you trying to lose? Come on.
No, are you being sincere? Or?
It's the right answer. 18%. Just you wait and see. It's going to be great.
Oh, see, my instinct wants to go with 92, but I feel like if I go with 92, I'm going to be wrong because 100% of people have been targets of phishing attacks. I'm going to go with 76. Oh, no. I should go with 92. That's what that
is. Is that your final answer, Sarah?
No, 92. 92 is my final answer.
And Sarah, you win the special round of security prank.
Oh, 92%.
I think I tied.
We tied.
Okay.
We tied.
You took the tie.
Oh, fantastic. I like that. That's good. Hey, you know what? Together we got our enterprise state of enterprise security report 100% correct. That's what happened there.
We passed. Teamwork all the way.
Anna, where could people go to, if they wanted to read the State of Enterprise Security Report themselves, where could they go?
So we will link it in the show notes, but you can go to 1Password.com/ State of Enterprise Security Report.
And there's dashes in between each word just to make it extra difficult to find. So that's good.
So we'll link it in the show notes.
Just go to the Googles. Go to the Googles. Googles will help you.
That's right. 1Password State of Enterprise. You'll find it. It'll be the first thing. You can look it up in DuckDuckGo.
I was going to say, DuckDuckGo will have it, and they won't sell your information.
That's right.
There we go. There was the episode tied up in a neat little bow.
Yay!
Oh, it does come right up. That's perfect. It's the first non-ad hit in DuckDuckGo. Perfect.
Nice.
I searched for 1Password State of Enterprise.
Is that how you knew the answers?
No. I did not reference it until after the fact.
Just checking.
Ahead to see if you were going to get the last one right or not after you locked in 92%. I did open the report and I went, oh, I missed it. Okay. Well, so I think what we've shown here today is that we don't need Matt at all. We're fine without him, that we can do this on our own just fine.
He can retire.
Yeah.
It's all about Magic Anna. If we have Magic Anna, the real Anna.
Yes. Not the one that talks about socks.
If it's just Sarah and me, we're hosed. The show will die a swift death. But as long as we have Anna, we'll be just fine.
That's very kind.
Yay.
Maybe we should do a show with all four of us one day. That would be fun.
I think, yes. I think we should. I think that's a great idea. All right. Love you both.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
Love you both. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Or whatever our theme song is.
Whatever our theme song is. Nice.